I'm Kevin Kunzman, Managing Editor of Contagion. Welcome to the Vaccine Race Podcast. Welcome, everyone, to our first ever episode of this limited podcast series from ContagionLive.com. For 10 plus months now, Contagion has been on the coronavirus beat, covering the first observed outbreak in China, its progression to pandemic status, and along the way, all the clinical, public health, and sometimes societal machinations that have been born out of it. It has been a world-changing series of events which have taken place so widely and so suddenly in a matter of weeks and months. And somehow, all this could get more unbelievable. Here we stand in October 2020, at the precipice of late-stage clinical data for vaccine candidates that could be administered to billions of people in the coming year. These candidates have been backed by billions of dollars in funding and aligned to nationwide distribution deals in a matter of months. Not months of just research, mind you, but months of existence. I mean, listen to the timeline laid out in this clip.
The Chinese published the sequence of the SARS coronavirus 2 on a public database on January the 10th. I got my team together on the 11th and said, we got a partner with Moderna to develop this in an mRNA platform. By the 15th, that's 5 days, we started doing it. 65 days later, we were in a phase one trial, and 7 months later, we're in a phase three trial. That process normally would take a few years, but we didn't compromise anything.
That's Dr. Anthony Fauci explaining last month how a novel vaccine delivery platform progressed from a theoretical breakthrough to an investigative candidate named mRNA-1273, a SARS-CoV-2 spike protein-encoded mRNA-based vaccine, which is currently being assessed in tens of thousands of volunteers for phase 3 outcomes. Another tens of millions of people may be able to receive that vaccine by the one-year anniversary of it literally being designed. And yet a world-leading public health expert does not believe there's been any serious compromise in safety or effectiveness research here. How can that be? How are vaccines developed, researched, monitored, rejected, accepted? The world has countless questions on these vaccines. The very agents which so much of medicine has hung hopes of developed COVID-19 immunity upon. So, as long as there's news and questions around them, we're going to produce episodes of this podcast. Each episode will feature a guest expert from the field of infectious disease, an epidemiologist, a virologist, a vaccinologist, anyone who can really contribute to our fuller understanding of preventive medicine right now. We'll also provide you updates on leading candidates, recent data, distribution agreements, timelines towards FDA consideration. In fact, let's just do that now. Here are some updates from the Contagion COVID-19 vaccine tracker. Earlier this week, the FDA released new guidance for vaccine developers to follow when submitting their product for Emergency Use Authorization, or EUA, approval. Within the guidance is language stating Phase 3 assessments submitted in part of the EUA application should include a median follow-up duration of at least 2 months post-vaccination regimen in order for the FDA to assuredly determine a benefit-risk profile. The particularities of this guidance would mean the four developers already into Phase 3 assessment would likely not be able to provide an adequate EUA application prior to the presidential election next month. Reports that came out within hours of this guidance indicated that White House officials originally attempted to block it because of its timeline conflicting with President Trump's campaign statement on having a COVID-19 vaccine available by November 3rd. Next, the International Phase 2 and 3 trial assessment for AZD-1222 from AstraZeneca developers and University of Oxford researchers remains at an impasse as the FDA shared plans last week to individually assess currently available safety outcome data after a serious, non-fatal adverse event was reported in a UK participant last month. Though the candidate received go-ahead from independent investigators to resume assessment in the UK about 3 weeks ago, the U.S. trial arm will await similar feedback from the FDA before resuming. Next, interim Phase 3 analysis for mRNA-1273 showed the two-dose vaccine candidate was generally well-tolerated across two different regimens in age cohort split between 56 and 70 years old and 71 years and older. That said, investigators observed the immune response in these older participants to be dose-dependent, meaning that a greater dose may be needed to elicit neutralizing antibody titers. And lastly, the phase 3 trial for Janssen's adenovirus-based vaccine, AD26-CoV-2S, has launched. The so-called ensemble study will assess the candidate in up to 60,000 participants. The company is in agreement with the U.S. Biomedical Advanced Research and Development Authority, or BARDA, to provide at least 100 million doses of the vaccine pending regulatory approval, and previously stated that the vaccine will be provided at a global, not-for-profit basis for emergency pandemic use. Now, let's go to our first ever guest. Dr. Donald Alcindor from the Vanderbilt Institute for Infection, Immunology, and Inflammation joined me for a discussion the other week on topics just a step outside of vaccine science. As with many measures designed to fight or prevent COVID-19, there's a great deal of partisanship surrounding vaccines. Dr. Alcindor shared his perspective into improving the message of vaccine advocacy, how healthcare disparity has harbored significant vaccine distrust among minorities, and what different community-based buy-in would look like throughout the U.S. We hope you enjoy the chat.
Like I was just saying, Dr. Alcindor, you know, the last thing we were really touching on was interpreting vaccine hesitancy not as something that maybe varies by the state of the disease or the product itself, but really among differing communities. You're mentioning what you're hearing from a different military community, and you mentioned again when we were on that roundtable call a couple of days ago, of course, minority communities having concerns that there isn't proven efficacy or safety for them, or that they may even be receiving a different product, right?
Exactly. So, yeah, and so I didn't think about that, but some people are concerned about that. Mm-hmm. And so you also have people that are these anti-vaxxers, because mm-hmm. people are reading more than they've ever read before. Mm-hmm. Even though they don't have the background sometimes to understand some of the things that they read. But an anti-vaxxer will come and tell people, well, you know, I've heard of somebody getting autism from getting a vaccine.
Yeah.
They say something like, vaccines contain dangerous chemicals like antifreeze and phenol and formaldehyde, mm-hmm. and all of these kinds of things. And that vaccines can give you allergies. Vaccines can cause you to have autism. Mm-hmm. Many things like that. Yeah. Another thing that people are very concerned about is the whole operation that surrounds the development of this vaccine. Mm-hmm. Okay, it came out as almost like a military operation, saying Operation Warp Speed.
Sure.
Sounds like something you're going to do with military equipment, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But what it was is that it was a mission. And again, mm-hmm. on this, they talk about it as a mission. The mission was to deliver 300 million doses of a safe and effective vaccine by January 1st, 2021.
Yeah.
And and again, this was backed by hardliners that had money, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
We're talking about real hardliners that had money and the power to say yes or no about very important things.
Yeah.
And so when you think about how a vaccine typical process goes from discovery, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? When I say discovery, I'm talking about you've identified a vaccine candidate to the disbursement of this vaccine into the population. Mm-hmm. We're talking about as much as 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
And you're saying to people, okay, we are going to complete vaccine from day one, 14 months down the road, we'll be ready to disperse this in the population.
Yeah.
The whole idea that people are concerned about, this is one thing that I talked to a black think tank in Chicago, and they told me that the people were most concerned about the government putting pressure on the FDA to approve a vaccine that wasn't ready.
Right.
And I tried to explain to them that the data monitoring board is not appointed by the government.
Right.
This is a unbiased group of professionals that will review the data coming out from a vaccine study,
yeah,
and then report on that data. This is a very rigorous report and review, mm-hmm. saying that this vaccine now is ready for the next step. And the next step is also a review board that I've had the privilege of sitting on, and that is the FDA advisory board for antivirals.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea is that the FDA advisory board is a group, again, of professionals, people that have virology experience, clinical trial experience, and so forth, and they get together and spend, you know, a whole day and a half looking at all of the data that's presented by the company that is developing this reagent. And then they go into deliberations and take most of the day and come out with a vote at the end.
Yeah.
I was a voting member. And the idea is that the media is there, there's families are there, some families are invited, the FDA brass is there, and so forth. And then the committee votes. And of course, a unanimous decision is made, okay, based on the majority of people that will say yes versus those that will say nay.
Right.
And the FDA then usually will always comply with the decision of the FDA advisory committee, unless it's unwarranted.
Right.
Now, even after a vaccine is approved, there's a process that is called pharmacovigilance. I don't know if you've heard that word.
Very,
but the idea is that the idea is that over time, the vaccine will be continually monitored by the company, and the company has to put together a plan for monitoring downstream after approval to look for adverse events that would occur in these patients receiving the vaccine.
Yeah.
And if this is warranted, then the FDA will have to pull this off the shelf. And this has happened to many drugs in the past.
Yeah.
And so in terms of hesitancy, people are always going to be hesitant of something new. And when I say new, when people sit down and you start giving them information they don't know, they can become even more hesitant.
Yeah.
Because when they find out that a company that has never produced a drug that was FDA approved ever is now given a whole lot of money out of nowhere from the federal government to pursue the leading candidate for the vaccine that will go into people. And again, this is a vaccine strategy that has never been used before.
Yeah, it's just a whole
new
platform.
Using RNA to be delivered into a person, and then that RNA makes a protein that's presented to the immune system to then result in an immune response that's protected. I want to say one thing about that vaccine that has to be said, is that this vaccine has more hype than anything I've ever seen. And when I say vaccine, that's plural.
Mm-hmm.
That vaccine is not here yet.
Yeah.
People talk about it like it's in hindsight. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think what we're looking at is the vaccine will be here when it's here, because as a researcher, what I think about when I think about vaccines is that vaccines are not foolproof. They are not a sure thing. Vaccines have traditionally caused some types of adverse events. We've seen adverse events with a vaccine from Oxford AstraZeneca.
Yeah.
The adverse event was one that was very serious, and that's why they halted that trial. But that trial has since begun again. And so what I'm saying is that to do any shortcuts here would be short-sighted for both the company and the public.
Yeah.
And I think if there's any influence from the government to influence some bypassing of normal protocol for efficacy and safety, I think that's disturbing to me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I absolutely agree with that notion, and you're right. I mean, the ways that the CDC and FDA have come into the headline in recent weeks in terms of intervention and almost tampering of the scientific process for something that has been so greatly celebrated as a vastly collaborative effort. And honestly, you know, the great wins of the vaccine process seem to kind of also be the great criticisms of how it's moving so quickly. And it's something that we had the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Fauci this week, and you know, he was emphasizing that moments of pausing a trial to assess an adverse event, and the means by which everything has become streamlined because they've really prioritized progressing viable candidates towards the right spot while others fall to the wayside. These are moments to emphasize, like, no, this is the scientific process that's actually working. Moments when it's not is when there is this sort of extracurricular involvement. I can't think of a better term. Sorry.
I think that when you have people that are non-scientists calling scientific shots,
yes,
I think you get into trouble with
that. There you go. Yes.
You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
And I think in the past, what you've seen is that scientists have been given the autonomy of basically making calls based on scientific discovery.
Mm-hmm.
This virus compounds that. We're not talking about influenza here, that we've known for a long time and developed strategies to mitigate it. We're talking about a new virus that have come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And again, this is a zoonotic infection. We're talking about the intermediate host for SARS-CoV-2 is not even known yet for sure.
Right.
We don't know the mutation capabilities of this virus over time. It is believed that if this virus becomes seasonal, if this coronavirus comes back routinely to visit us every year, in combination with influenza, I read one disturbing fact that always stops me and make me catch my breath, and that is the combination of this virus coming back every year along with influenza on a global scale could reduce the world population by a tenth.
Wow.
I mean, you just take that in very slowly.
Yeah.
And so I think with the ingenuity of the scientific community, communities that are willing to do the right thing, people that are going to step up and come outside of themselves for something important. And as Americans, we've done that before. We have come outside of ourselves and could be selfless enough to do something that is right. And I think that people will come to an understanding that if this vaccine is safe, effective, and available, that they have to consider it.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, science is the answer to this. And if you have non-scientists drawing up plans for this to end, it's going to be problematic.
Yeah. Or it's not going to end.
Simply put. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, if we're talking about, you know, that buy-in, Dr. Alcindor, if we're talking about, I think you very aptly put it before that, if we're looking to achieve that magic number of overall immunity, either from developed antibodies or immunity due to, you know, prophylaxis, if we're trying to set the difference, is the differentiator really going to be, you think, the phase three results that are pending very soon?
I think that's where you are. Okay. So if the phase three results come in and it's a smashing success, and what I say by smashing success is that about 15,000 people got the vaccine itself. 15,000 got the placebo.
Mm-hmm.
They sent these people out to interact in the general public. And what they want to see is how many of the people that got the vaccine actually came down with COVID-19 versus people that got the placebo.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say a smashing success is that the people that got the vaccine at a rate that's very high in terms of those people that were protected. So a vaccine equals to protection out there in the public. And the numbers are very high in favor of those people getting the vaccine and not getting sick, as opposed to the placebo, that would be a smashing success.
Right.
However, it's a numbers game as well.
Yeah.
You need to have enough of these numbers coming back to assure you that what you have is real. Because this is the area that will be most critically analyzed by the Data Monitoring Board and the FDA Advisory Board and all the scientists. Mm-hmm. What you're looking at is that for the longest time, you're going to see phase three clinical trial results, possibly in newspapers, and explained down to a level that people can understand it, because this will be the most publicized vaccine that we have seen in a very long time.
Yeah, possibly since polio.
Okay. And again, I want to say that what Meharry Medical College is doing, we've joined the Vaccine Trial Network as an institution.
Yeah.
Okay? And we did this back in June.
Yeah.
And so the idea is that I have been assigned to be a community engagement dissemination specialist. And I am in charge with engaging community partners and stakeholders to disseminate this information about vaccine and vaccine safety. Mm-hmm. And again, this is only an attempt to gain a level of trust and our confidence for them to participate in these trials after being given adequate, scientifically sound information.
Right.
And again, hoping that they would volunteer as recipients of this vaccine once it's FDA approved. And there's another underlying current here as well. Black and brown people will tend to trust people that look like them.
Right.
At Meharry, we are making people understand very clearly it is going to be people that look like you that will be administering this vaccine to you.
Right.
That you have been able to trust over the years. We've delivered your babies. Mm-hmm. We were there when you had a heart attack. We were there when you broke an arm. Yeah. And we've been there for many years. Yeah. And we have a reputation that goes beyond reproach. And the idea is that we will deliver a quality product to you, and your health and wellness is our primary goal. And we want the people of our community here to understand that.
Yeah.
And I think they do. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Right.
Let me tell you something. Many times, you can get a person that is a liaison within the community that's respected. And you will take a person that is not even educated and will tell 50 people that this vaccine is worth getting. Mm-hmm. And they will stand in line until the midnight hour to receive that vaccine because the person that told them that that vaccine was worth taking is a person that they know and trust.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Where a researcher can come in there and have all the glory, all the glory of coming from big schools and know how to say everything right.
That guy has less stock.
But doesn't have the trust.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, he has less stock in that community.
I don't know if you know what I mean by that.
Oh no, I mean, like that particularly. Obviously, I'm not privy to that kind of, experience in my life, but, living in a rural town in New Jersey growing up, understanding that sometimes the difference between, adherence to an idea is the intimacy. It's, it's exactly that. The mom and pop private practitioner in the town giving the vaccine as opposed to, any investigator coming in and saying, this is what it does. This is what it can be.
That's right.
So, and it's something, Doc, as a layman, my experiences as I've come to learn and understand these things and just covering them and speaking with experts such as yourself is that it's presented organic opportunities to have conversations with my own loved ones on topics that I thought were previously held common knowledge about vaccines that really weren't getting through to them, right? And it kind of exposes this between the severities of absolutely knowing and trusting the process of vaccine production and regulation in our country and being vitriolically against the entire idea of it, there's this huge gap of people that are maybe just nervous to know and maybe think they do know and just honestly don't. And you're right when you say that those are the swing people. Those are the people that you absolutely need to get buy-in from.
Yeah.
And I was curious to know if there were successes from the measures that we've been talking about in other measures of maybe, even if it's not preventive medicine, but just in terms of mitigating outbreaks, anything else we've been able to get that middle ground to buy into before that we can learn from.
So this is the thing. This is the thing. I think there's a significant number of people that are on board with wearing masks.
Yeah.
However, young people represent a problem, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Is this the reason I say that is because I was at a gas station and the word COVID-19 came up. I told them I was studying this kind of stuff. And then the person told me that, hey, you know what? My friend had that and nothing happened. I don't think it's a problem.
Yeah.
And then I go to a place where I had, having my car repaired, and they give me a ride to work because my car stays there. And then I was riding with a person, and he said, I'm from a rural community.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells me that the majority of people in his rural community think that this whole thing is a hoax. right here in Nashville. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so you are dealing with a level of misinformation that goes beyond anything you've ever seen in your life. And the idea is that I think information dissemination is something that is going to be very important in these next 2 or 3 months. You will probably see early stages of vaccine development for distribution if that smashing result I talked about comes to pass. Yeah. You're going to see that.
Yeah.
I certainly don't think that will happen before November, but I think January or February you'll start to see something happen.
Yeah.
But I'm gearing up to go on a town hall. I'm gearing up to go on a mission. And my mission is to get out there and put this in the base. I'm talking about the facts, the fundamentals, the knowledge base in the face of those people that are on the fence, of in the face of people that simply just don't know.
Right.
And I'm going to remind them and say, how many vaccines did your child that you send to school every day have received? Then I'll ask them, because it's more than 10. Mm-hmm. And so the idea is that I'm going to ask them, how many people do you know that have children in school just like yours where these vaccines were problematic and saw an adverse event in the child that caused them to be hospitalized or stay ill for some time?
Mm-hmm.
And so all I'm saying is that I'm calling into question something they're familiar with. You see, when people are on the fence, it's about information they don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm going to do is just remind them of information that they do know about.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they have sent children to school
yeah.
on a regular basis for many, many years.
Yeah.
They have taken many vaccine and vaccine doses over time.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that happened to those children.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And so you have to, what I'm saying to you is that you have to approach people, you have to meet people where they are in their understanding, and then you have to be prepared to take them from there to somewhere else, which is a higher level of understanding than if you're going to convince them that this is something worth doing. You know what I'm saying?
It's less of you're thinking about this wrong and you're incorrect on this, and more about you've actually been doing this right and you haven't put your thought to it, and you can keep doing it right. And Dr. Alcindor, let me ask you something else that I took away from, again, we had this discussion with Dr. Fauci on a podcast last week, and something that he mentioned was, you know, his stress from the perspective of, again, the big vaccine that we're talking about being Moderna, the emphasis and need for better representation in the clinical trials, saying of course, you know, we need more Black, we need more Brown, we need more Latinx people, we need better representation for these groups that are more concerned to get it, to show that this isn't just a drug for white people, this is for everyone. The part left unsaid in that entire explanation is how exactly you go about, even at that level, that's an even greater level of trust. Is that something similar that we've had to see in recruitment efforts for these?
Companies have routinely recruited cohorts that were underrepresented of Black and Brown folks. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And the idea is that it is the responsibility of the people that are reviewing clinical trial data to make these changes at an early stage in the recruitment process for the clinical trials for a given cohort.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You got to ask yourself, if you are recruiting patients for an HIV medication and you don't include Black and Brown folks in that recruitment process that make up your cohort, then you have to ask yourself, have you really put your drug to the test in terms of looking at the effects of your drug in people that are highly impacted by the disease?
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so this becomes a critical issue. And so what we have seen in terms of recruitment of minority populations for clinical trials, it's been a problem for the longest time.
Yeah.
It is critical now even more so in the political atmosphere that we're in right now.
Yeah.
It's a very important time to see how effective this drug can be in certain people that have a higher level of comorbidities. Mm-hmm. However, what I think is that you have to have a campaign to basically, this becomes a national campaign, mm-hmm. to basically engage these populations at a level of where they are, a level of explaining to them what has happened in the past, and to explain to them in a very clear way that we have developed a strategy yeah. to mitigate or to prevent what has happened in the past so that it doesn't happen again. You see, you have to basically say to people that, you know what, I know where you've been, and yeah. we have to have the admission that that was wrong.
Yeah, yeah. There has to be a concession that's been done wrong.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have to have the admission that that was wrong, and then there has to be a clear understanding of how we've taken a new approach
yeah.
to make the differences that we didn't make in the first place,
right.
and how your health and wellness is a priority to us. I give you an example. And so the idea is that we were talking to these folks, and they were telling us how certain physicians were treating them in a way when they came in for a clinical visit with outright disrespect. Mm-hmm. And the idea is that you go into physician's office, and being a black person, and the physician doesn't want to spend any time with you telling you that, you know, that pain that you're having is all in your head and so forth, and that matter, you know, dismissive of your clinical condition.
Yeah.
Let me just say this. You will never forget that as a patient. You see what I'm saying?
I mean, not even just representation for the fact of understanding pathophysiologically or just adverse event yeah. risk or overall yeah. safety and efficacy of these vaccines in this population, but also interpreting the outside factors that influence the means by which Absolutely. Healthcare progresses—it's a perpetuating Absolutely. Issue, and just not addressing it up front is deeply concerning in that front. So, it's great to know, at the very least, though this is a greater problem that requires the greater resolve that you just highlighted. That
absolutely. I want to tell you one thing that I heard that took me by surprise. It's when somebody told me, and this was a discussion we've been having on one of these Zoom calls, mm-hmm. when I was told that sometimes a person that doesn't have insurance get different doctors than a person that has private insurance. Mm-hmm. Meaning that a person that gets Medicaid will sometimes get different set of doctors than a person that has private insurance. But when I heard that, and I'm talking about this was 2 weeks ago, mm-hmm. when I heard that, and then that was validated by somebody else on the call, I thought that was unbelievable.
Right.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Can you imagine that?
No.
The idea, again, yeah. when the military retired person told me about, he was concerned about not getting an appropriate vaccine or getting less of the, you know, a bad vaccine versus a good vaccine or what's left over from a vaccine and so forth.
Right.
And a good vaccine. It came in perspective for me when I heard that.
Yeah.
And so what I'm saying is that, and then I got on a call.
Yeah.
And this was a call for, this was an institute, okay, where there are many presentations that were made. And then I heard the fact that at nursing homes that had the majority of black residents at that nursing home, mm-hmm. it turns out that infection control and the number of personnel and the number of specialized nurses at those particular nursing homes mm-hmm. were greatly underrepresented.
Right.
And this was somebody that was telling me this that had been looking at this for 20 some odd years. You see yeah. what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so they had seen this develop. And the thing about it is that you know, when something happens mm-hmm. and something, and nothing is said about it, it can go on forever, yeah. unchanged.
Yeah. Yeah, if it's not addressed up front, if it's not, as you said before, if it's not seated as an as a problem or a fault that needs to be corrected, there's no reason for
there the change are some to come. People, there are some people that are in power at the level of changing things overnight. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But the influence that would basically crush the political will to do that has always been there, it seems.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a there is power out there that mm-hmm. could change some of this overnight. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But the idea is that the you know, having the political will and being able to risk the political consequences of making an important change like that can be risked by most people. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. It has to be.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
And I'm going to always go fight against that. I had a call, and again, these are all Zoom calls, and I'm on committees of all sorts. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And I was calling to our dissemination committee group, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I posed this, and these are academicians and researchers and doctors, right, on this call. And I posed to them, if that vaccine was ready now, would you take it?
Yeah.
None of them said they would take it.
Wow.
These are academicians, researchers, and doctors, and none of them, and again, you know, their greatest concern is the expediency at which this vaccine was developed.
That was
one of their major concerns.
Wow.
And so, I'm saying this: the vaccine hesitancy that we've had in the past has been amplified in this pandemic.
Yeah.
And the idea is that we simply cannot wait for this to go through the natural process of infecting enough people to get the herd immunity.
Yeah.
We are going to have a vaccine to make this right.
It's going to have to play a role.
And the idea is that we will have to work with the vaccine companies, the federal government, the FDA, the CDC, and community-based organizations, and all doctors, and all will have to work together to make it such that this is an environment that people will be willing to come outside of themselves.
Yeah.
That is, even to make an exception.
Yeah.
To consider this vaccine as a viable option to stop this monster that's killing people at 1,000.
Thanks again to Dr. Alcindor for his time and critical perspective on what's needed to assure greater national buy-in to evidence-effective and safe vaccines. We're sure to see these measures play out in the coming months just as we would late-stage trial data. And for more COVID-19 vaccine news and insights, be sure to visit us at contagionlive.com. Until next time, I'm Kevin Kunzman. Thanks for following the vaccine race.